Ghosts, cryptids, murder, conspiracies, beer, what, the, ale.
Hello, friends.
Hello.
Welcome back to What the Ale. I'm Alana Ray.
And I'm Mama J.
And before we get into it, Mama, do you have any What the Ale moments? What are you drinking? What's going on?
I'm drinking an Iron and Steel Imperial Stout from Oakland United Brewery. So sticking with the stouty vibe. And let's see, What the Ale moments. I dropped my kid at college this week. I think it went as well as possible. Like, the child had friends there that could help us with the move-in. And it was just like easy and lovely. And I got them set up with everything they need, you know, in terms of like storage and snacks and hygiene stuff and all the things. And so, so far they're really enjoying it. And yeah, it felt good that everything went so smoothly.
That's awesome. I mean, I remember
good with the ale.
It's a good with the ale. I mean, it's exciting and like crazy that they're starting college. Yeah. But they seem like I've been tracking their little stories. They seem to be having a good time. Seems like they made some friends, maybe. So
So there was a little drama last night, you know, because there was some alcohol involved with some of the people. Oh. And my responsible child ended up taking care of somebody. But you know, that's first week of college vibes, I guess. So,
I mean, it is. We all went to a party our first week of college. Like, let's not even pretend.
So my kid ended up playing like the parent of the group. But that's all right.
I was also that friend, so I understand.
Yeah. What about you? Any with the ale or any anything you're drinking that's good?
Yeah, I'm drinking an Allagash White, which is definitely a New England staple. I think it's made in Maine, but I don't know for sure. But it's just like a nice little like refreshing beer that is you can get everywhere here. What the ale moments. I mean, I think a kind of like nice one is I'm dog sitting for 9 days, which is great, but it's like so funny to see, I guess, the difference in how people like have dogs. Like, these dogs aren't allowed on the furniture and like they don't sleep in bed with you or like anything like that. I don't know. It's so weird because like I'm staying in the basement and they're not allowed into the basement. So like they don't like all go down to like watch TV or whatever. Oh, here she is. And they're not allowed to come with me. So it's just very silly. But I'm having a good time. It's a beautiful house and like they have a massive yard. So we were having fun playing ball back there earlier. But
that's nice.
Yeah. Just dog sitting, having a good time.
Oh yeah. One of my dog that got fixed got his cone of shame off. So he's very happy about that.
Oh yay. No more cone.
Now he can play with his toys more easily and he can run more easily and be crazy more easily without the cone. So
yeah, and hopefully he won't injure his sister again.
I know, she's got to wear her cone 3 more days because he got hurt with his cone in her eye. So now we're having to nurse her little eye and give her drops multiple times a day to heal the eye. So yeah, it's safer for all of us with him not having the cone on. So
yeah, definitely. What a silly use. Well, I'm glad that he's out of his cone and I'm glad that Angel Face will be out of her cone soon. Cool. Well, what story do you got this week, Mom?
Well, I wanted to do something a little bit lighthearted. There is a death, so it's not completely lighthearted, but just a little more conspiracy vibe, what was this about kind of vibe. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you know, but this is the 30th anniversary of an album called Monster by a band called REM. So,
I mean, it makes sense timeline wise, but I didn't realize that there was a conspiracy associated with it.
it's associated with one of their songs, but their song is about, well, the song's not actually about, the song stole some words from an event that happened. So in honor of that 30th anniversary of the album, I decided to cover some events and conspiracy theories that inspired them to write the song, What's the Frequency, Kenneth?
Okay.
Now, Alana, do you have any favorite REM songs?
You know, I'm gonna be real. I am not a, like, I like REM, but I wouldn't say I'm a huge fan. So, like, it's gonna be real basic, but I really like Losing My Religion. Think it's a great song.
Yeah.
But again, like, I think they're a good band, but I don't know much outside of the greatest hits. So
yeah, I was gonna say Losing My Religion is by far my favorite of theirs, and then Everybody Hurts, only because, you know, back then when that song came out, I felt like it was, you know, it was very rare to have a man saying everybody hurts, everybody cries, you know, and like normalizing having feelings like that. So, so I really do love that song too.
Yeah, that's a good one. I always forget that's REM. I don't know why. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, and you gotta like shiny, happy people with B-52s. So
yes,
it's the silliest video ever, but it's you can't hear that song and not smile though.
It's kind of like Love Shack too. I think the B-52s just knew how to make people smile, honestly.
Yeah, they knew how to like get people dancing.
The dog has opinions about that. Thank you for sharing.
All right. So I did not know, like when the song What's the Frequency, Kenneth came out, I really had no idea what that was about. Because there was an event that happened when I was 8 years old that I never heard about because when I was 8 years old, I didn't watch the news. So Alana, do you know where What the Frequency, Kenneth comes from? Do you have any idea? Yeah,
no.
I never knew either. I just learned about it this year.
Okay.
So on Sunday, October 4th of 1986, around 10:43 PM, CBS News anchor Dan Rather was walking home after having dinner with a colleague. And he was like walking on Park Avenue when he noticed that two men were starting to follow him. And one of these men kept repeating the question, Kenneth, what's the frequency? And kept yelling at Dan Rather, Kenneth, what's the frequency? And, you know, Dan Rather would speed up his pace and they would track him and stay with him and continuously yelling the phrase, Kenneth, what's the frequency? And the phrase meant nothing to Dan Rather. Like he had no idea what they were talking about. And he tried to tell them, I'm not Kenneth, you have the wrong person. And that, you know, he just didn't know what they were talking about. And the two men persisted and continued to repeat, Kenneth, what's the frequency? And they eventually became more aggressive. And one of the men ended up punching Dan Rather in the jaw just up under his left ear. Now, he did fall to the ground, but he was pretty quickly able to jump up and try to run from them. So he ran into the lobby of 1075 Park Avenue just to try to get help. But the two men, you know, followed him into the building, and in the lobby, they continued to assault him. So at some point, you know, he was like on the ground, they were punching and kicking him while repeating the question, Kenneth, what's the frequency? So there was a doorman and a superintendent in the building that witnessed the attack. So the superintendent did intervene and the attackers like fled the scene. So I don't know. Have you ever heard of any of this? Like,
I haven't, but I was thinking about the question. Like, it almost makes me think, like, you know, like when like anchors will like talk to each other on the news and they'll be like, oh, like, what's the weather? You know, whatever.
Yeah.
That's kind of where I could see that. Like, maybe they heard him say that, but it's weird because I feel like I've heard that story, but like, I don't think I have.
Yeah. I had never heard it until this year. And like, I knew that song when it came out, but I didn't realize, you know, because I was so young when this event happened, I was only 8. So, the REM song didn't come out until, you know, years later. So I had no idea of this association, but it's just very strange. So anyways, Dan Rather, had multiple bruises on his back and, you know, on his extremities, and then his jaw was swollen from that initial punch.
Oh, wow.
You know, and these men, they didn't attempt to steal anything, even though he did have like some cash on him. And there was no other indication as to why they targeted him. But he was taken to Lenox Hill Hospital and treated for minor injuries, and then was like released the same day.
Okay.
So, I mean, really, he was pretty lucky that, you know, it was just some bumps and bruises, and they didn't do anything more to him because they were clearly very aggressive.
Right. Were the men arrested or?
Okay. So we're going to get into that. So, the description of the attackers was that they were both like in their 30s. And then one of them was described as 6 feet tall, dark hair and a mustache. And then the other interesting description about them was they were dressed in suits with white shirts and black ties. So, you know, they weren't houseless friends. They weren't like thuggy vibe. Like they were well-dressed, like professional looking men. So, you know, you just like, when you would think of a random attack, you wouldn't think it'd be two men dressed in suits, you know?
I wonder if it was like organized crime though.
Well, I don't know if that ever became a theory, but I mean, it definitely, it would sound more like that than, you know, some of the other things that it could be.
Right. So, I mean, like, what if, this is going to sound really strange, but like, what if like he reported on some busting of some mob situation and they were like retaliating? I don't know. That would be plausible.
Yeah, it could be, but that's not one of the theories.
Okay, well, I'm making things up. And
But there was a question of whether this was just like a case of mistaken identity because they kept using the name Kenneth.
Right.
And clearly his name is Dan rather. So, you know, his name is not Kenneth. That's not his middle name. So they were thinking maybe it was just like mistaken identity and they thought he was somebody else. Mm-hmm. 2 days later, Dan Rather was back on the air, and in his closing statement, after reporting on the news, he addressed the attack because by then a lot of people had heard about it, like it had made the news. And his statement was brief, but he basically acknowledged that he was luckier than many people who endure violence in the streets, and that he was thankful for the men who helped him. So the statement, I mean, it was just, I watched it, you know, it was pretty just like professional and just, you know, wanting to let people know he's okay and that he's okay. Now the police didn't have much to go on because there was no clear motive. Obviously in 1986, there was no like video surveillance that was like prevalent to follow where these people went or anything. And so the case went cold pretty quickly. They just didn't have any leads to go on. And part of that was because they just couldn't figure out like why it happened. So there was not like a, oh, this person was mad about this thing, we could find that person here. You know, it was like completely random.
Wow. That's always interesting, I feel, when it's like completely random. Like why and how?
Yeah. And so, anyways, the case went cold and, you know, people did not forget about it though, because the question, Kenneth, what's the frequency, sparked a lot of interest and people, some people did reverse the order. And so that's where we get, what's the frequency, Kenneth? And you know, R.E.M. obviously reversed the order of the words in their song. But the quote did become a part of pop culture in more way than one. So in 1987, just a year after this happened, there was a California band named Game Theory, and they released an album, Lolita Nation. And a 46 second track on the album was Kenneth, What's the Frequency? And then 6 years later, in 1993, Daniel Clowes released a graphic novel that was called Like a Velvet Glove Cast in Iron. And the phrase is used in a subplot as a conspiracy theorist asked the protagonist, what's the frequency, Kenneth? And the idea in the story was that a godlike creature named Mr. Jones could only be contacted by achieving a specific mental frequency. And in the comic, the protagonist is also not named Kenneth, just like Dan Rather was not named Kenneth. So, you know, that was another way it showed up in pop culture. And then obviously in 1994, R.E.M. released their album Monster. And the first track is What's the Frequency, Kenneth? And it reached number one in the top 40 hits. And the lead singer, Michael Stipe, said, quote, It was the premier unsolved American surrealist act of the 20th century. It's a misunderstanding that was scarily random, media hyped, and just plain bizarre.
Cool.
And I was like, huh, yeah. But, you know, but again, I was so young. I didn't even realize that so many people knew about it or conspiracy theories were going. So a year after its release, Dan Rather ended up joining REM to perform the song on The Late Show with David Letterman.
That's funny.
And that's when we learned Dan Rather is not a singer.
No.
He kind of doesn't have musicality or timing, but he was a very good sport about it.
So, he tried.
Yeah. But well, and years later, you know, REM did an interview with Dan Rather where they talked about it. And I'm going to get more into what they said about the song and, you know, what they were trying to say towards the end. But yeah, it seems like they ended up becoming friends out of that.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah. So for years, nothing happened. And then in 1994, one of the two men who engaged or that were involved in that first attack engaged in another assault. And this time the victim was killed.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Now, interestingly, this attack occurred right before the release of the song of the, you know, that same year. So The song kind of reminded everyone what happened, but you know, and even though the song wasn't actually about Dan Rather or the attack, but you know, people who knew where the title came from, it kind of reminded them of it. So It's kind of a weird coincidence that another attack happened right before the song's release. Right. The song had nothing to do with it. It was just strange timing. So I just wanted to point that out because it did happen before the song's release. So on August 31st, 1994, around 5 p.m., a man came into Rockefeller Center with, and that's where the Today Show was filmed.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he was armed with a rifle and he attempted to storm into the studio when he was stopped by a stagehand named Campbell Montgomery. And Montgomery noticed the weapon, but was kind of able to run him off, even though it doesn't sound like Montgomery had a weapon. So maybe just like, you know, having somebody notice him kind of freaked him out and he ran away. But, you know, so he did flee the scene, but he returned later and Montgomery was outside, you know, kind of watching out for him to see if he was going to come back. And so then he did see him coming back and he tried to go to alert the police. And that's when this man shot him in the back.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Now the shooter, he was like immediately arrested and he was identified as William Tagger. And Tagger, he was a 46-year-old man from North Carolina. Now, this is where we get into some of the interesting conspiracies about why all this happened. So, Tagger told the police that NBC had been beaming transmissions into his brain for many years and that they had been watching him and sending him signals. He was very paranoid, and he said he even rented a car so they couldn't track him because he believed that his car was bugged. And he said he went to the studio to get them to stop the transmissions.
Oh, wow.
Now, he denied any history of drug or alcohol use, but he was obviously dealing with some paranoid delusions, and he was later diagnosed with schizophrenia.
Okay.
Now, due to mental illness, he did plea, and so he was convicted of manslaughter instead of murder for the death of Campbell. Campbell Montgomery, and he was sentenced to 12 and a half to 25 years in Sing Sing prison in New York.
Okay.
So, I mean, obviously we can look at this case and say, well, clearly these were paranoid delusions from a mentally ill person, but this is where some of the other stories begin to emerge. Because once in jail, you know, he's hanging out at Sing Sing and he starts talking to the guards and to other prison staff. And now he has a different story. So he is no longer paranoid about the transmissions to his brain, but during an interview with the prison psychiatrist, he claims to be a time traveler from the year 2265.
Don't they all? I swear. Okay, bud. I have a question. Did they ever identify the other person?
No, and I was gonna mention that. So he never gave that guy up. He never said anything about who it was. They couldn't find any connections with anybody that was likely to be in New York at that time. Like they just had no way to prove.
Wow.
So they never even really had another suspect.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So that still remains a mystery. So his story about this other timeline was that he said he was a convicted felon in that timeline as well, and that he went back in time as part of a dangerous experiment, and that he would receive his freedom if he cooperated in the mission. Now, he didn't really say what the mission was completely. He did say that they had a chip implanted in his brain so that authorities in the future could track his movements through space and time.
Okay.
And this is when he admitted to attacking Dan Rather. So nobody suspected him of doing that. Nobody had any idea that he was connected to that at all. But just completely unprompted, he says that he was the one that attacked Dan Rather.
Okay.
His reason for the attack was that he thought Dan Rather looked like the vice president of his timeline. And apparently, in 2265, the future VP's name is Kenneth Burrows. And so, Dan Rather, obviously, he just thought Dan Rather looked like Kenneth Burrows, who is this vice president in his future. And so, that's why he attacked him. And so Dan Rathers was shown photos of Tagger, and he was able to positively ID him as one of the attackers. And Tagger and Dan Rather both were able to describe the location where the attack took place, and their descriptions matched perfectly. And that information wasn't public knowledge, so it further confirmed that Tagger was one of those attackers and that he was in the building that day.
Oh wow. That's
Yeah.
really I mean interesting that he confessed.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, what a story.
Yeah. So, but I mean, it's interesting that he had the two different stories, because he told both of the stories, the one where, NBC had been transmitting in his brain, and then, this other story of this future timeline.
Right.
Now there's one other theory that emerged, and this was actually a theory that was from somebody named Kenneth. So, around the time that the attack on Dan Rather happened, there was a few former music publicist and an inventor named Kenneth Schaefer, and
Okay.
he figured out a way to hijack Russian television broadcasts using U.S. satellite receivers. And it was just like, this was like Cold War era, and there was just like not much known about Russian programming during the Cold War. And so this just allowed some insight. So he allowed viewing of these programs at Columbia University in New York. And I want to stress, it was like soap operas and cartoons and stuff. It wasn't like Soviet secrets, but people were still interested just because we didn't know much about them.
Right, sure.
And yeah, so I mean, but innocent. It's not like he was spying technically, but we just got something that we didn't have before.
Yeah.
So Dan Rather was one of the visitors at Columbia who came to view the content, and his visit was on the same day that he was attacked.
Oh, interesting.
So yeah, so Ken Schaefer believes that he was the Kenneth that Tagger was targeting, and that Tagger must have seen Dan Rather leaving and assumed that he was Kenneth. And this makes even more sense because Kenneth stated that people often questioned him about how the transmissions worked, but he would never share the frequencies, because he wanted to be the only one that had access to this. So, I mean, that gave him like clout and money and power and whatever.
Right.
And so he would not share those frequencies. So people did often ask him about the frequencies. So his theory is that about the possibility that Taggart was working you know, and then this is where I think it gets a little far-fetched. He thinks that Taggart was working for the Soviets to try to find out how Schaefer was doing it so they could stop the transmissions from being intercepted.
Yeah.
And then he also said maybe they used Taggart's schizophrenia to deflect attention from the real motive, which was that they wanted to stop the transmissions. You know, and, you know, I don't know if it was actually, you know, the Soviets involved at all, or if Taggart just wanted to know the frequencies. But this story, you know, in that way, seems, well, it's more plausible than Taggart's stories, you know, his stories of being a time traveler, his stories of the transmissions being inserted in his brain.
Right. But it does make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Like, I could totally see that being plausible.
Well, it just makes sense where that sentence would come from.
Right. Well, yeah. Also, like, maybe he didn't go to the lecture or whatever, but maybe he, like, in his brain was like, oh, he's probably a guy that looks a certain way or whatever, and just, like you said, mistook Dan Rather. But do they look alike at all? Like, did you see?
You know, I don't think so. But, you know, but the other thing is, like, Dan Rather is a professional person. So, and, you know, and a celebrity. So maybe if Taggart was there, maybe he saw people like coming up to Dan Rather, shaking his hand or wanting pictures with him. So you know, if he didn't know who Dan Rather was, I could see him thinking, oh, this guy must be Kenneth Schaefer because everybody's interested in him.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, or even just like the way he was dressed, like maybe he, I don't know. I feel like there's like, stereotypical things like professors or whatever wear. So maybe he was like, maybe Dan was in like a blazer and looking smart, and he was like, it's that guy, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, this was a time where, you know, yeah, somebody like Dan Rather would probably be wearing a suit if he was going to something like that. So, yeah. So anyways, so those are the theories. Well, and obviously the theories are the theories, and then there's just also mental illness. So,
right. Yeah.
So what do you think happened?
I mean, I totally think it could kind of be a mix of both. Like, I think it could be like this guy is mentally ill, and maybe he heard about what this other Kenneth guy was doing.
Yeah.
And it was a case of mistaken identity, or, you know, it totally could have been, like, I mean, I don't know. I have trouble believing the Soviets were involved in it, but like, I also know that they definitely are out here spying. So, you know, it's, I wouldn't put it past them, but I don't think that's the case, at least in this one.
Well, and I agree. To me, it seems like mental illness is the most likely thing, and that maybe the mental illness went along with the fact that, you know, Kenneth Schaefer had, you know, had tapped into that. And so he, I mean, I do think that makes sense where that sentence come from, you know, Kenneth, what's the frequency?
Right.
I think it's a little far, obviously a time travel theory seems just far-fetched, you know, but, and then I don't think the Russians would actually care if we watched their cartoons and shit, but, you know, but I could see them if they saw that as like, what would be the next thing that they would be able to tap into.
Right. Cause it could be a threat to national security.
Yeah. Cause it was a weird, you know, I mean, well, and even now it's a weird time. So, you know, but I don't know that the Russians were involved, but I could see him just like wanting to know the frequencies because he had his own paranoid delusions about whatever.
Yeah. I mean, that definitely would make sense. And this guy, Taggart, like, he didn't have any sort of history of like being a Russian sympathizer or anything. Like, there was nothing like that really mentioned.
No, I didn't see anything like that, so I don't think so. And that's why, like, I don't really think Russia or Soviet Union at the time was like involved.
Right.
Yeah, because it didn't sound like there was any actual connection.
Yeah. Yeah. I was wondering, because I know, like, that's what, you know, when the Soviets like took credit for JFK's assassination, it's because, you know, Oswald or whatever liked Russia, right? So like, I don't know, there are things like that where I'm like, sometimes, you know, you could see it a little bit, but if they weren't claiming him or anything, like, I doubt, you know.
Yeah, so I think it was probably mostly mental illness that had to do with it, but I do think that question, Kenneth, what's the frequency, probably had to do with this Kenneth Schaefer at Columbia.
Yeah, I could totally see that, because I mean, I don't know what other Kenneth It could be.
Well, I mean, it could be the vice president of 2265, Alana.
Very true.
I mean, you never know.
My great, great, great grandchildren, probably, if you get that, if you see it, please let me know.
Yeah. So, anyways, October 27th, 2010, Tagger was released from prison and he was 63 years old at the time.
Okay.
You know, he just doesn't seem like a threat to society anymore. He's probably, you know, on his medication and everything. So, so that's the story. Yeah, I don't know. I just had never heard that. And I came across it this year and I was like, wow, like, I can't believe that I had no idea where that came from.
Yeah. Well, I love all those like rock and roll songs where like you learn meanings later. Like what, there's like a bunch of like Led Zeppelin songs that are about Lord of the Rings, but like no one fucking knows unless you like really listen to the lyrics. Like,
oh my gosh, I didn't know that either.
Yeah. God, I don't remember what song, but yeah, there's like, I think it's, I'm pretty sure it's Zeppelin. I know it's one of the psychedelic bands, but it was very like, they had songs that were like about hobbits running around and like, I don't know. So,
oh my gosh. Yeah. I had no idea about that.
Yeah. They're all just nerds in the rock and roll world, I think.
Yeah. Okay. So I am going to bring this back to REM only because, you know, their song is the, you know, and the fact that it's the 30th anniversary is the, you know, main reason why I chose to do this one. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Michael Stipe, who's the lead singer, you know, he is known for like thought-provoking lyrics and, you know, he's a little bit of a poet and everything. And he, you know, for this particular song, and he, this was, I watched an interview between him and Dan Rather, where Dan Rather was asking about the meaning of the song or how he came up with it. Mm-hmm. And he said that he was writing a song about generational gaps, and particularly older generations trying to understand younger generations. And Michael Stipe said he decided to include "What's the Frequency, Kenneth?" to demonstrate that it is quote unquote inscrutable or impossible to understand. So, you know, that sometimes those generational gaps, like, I mean, I do think that's true a lot of time where older generations, like, they try to understand, but because we all have our own experiences and vantage point, it's sometimes hard for different, you know, generations to like fully understand each other.
Well, and people in general, like, have trouble with change, right? So even from, you know, when I was born to now, like the way life has changed, like now we're talking on a computer across the world and can see each other. That didn't even exist like when I was born, you know, like it makes sense. So,
So, well, and, you know, and then I just, you know, so the song wasn't anything about Dan Rather. He just decided to use that, you know, because that question was such a pop culture thing back then, he decided to include that. Mm-hmm. But it, you know, but it wasn't about that, you know, but I thought that was really cool. 'Cause I didn't even realize that song was intended to be about generation gaps. And like, I've read the lyrics now, you know, 'cause the lyrics are kind of fast and, you know, I don't know that I caught all of it, but I will say, you know, I don't think he's wrong about the generation gap thing. And so I just want to say, if everybody can stay open to the fact that we can learn a lot from each other and we could all really help each other grow, then that's always a good thing. And, you know, Alana, you know that my favorite human in the whole world is the great Maya Angelou.
Yeah.
And she would always say, once we know better, we do better. And so, you know, I'm just saying, generational gaps, we've got to try to stay open to the fact that, you know, younger folks can learn from older folks' wisdom, and older folks can learn about how times are changing and we're seeing things differently, you know, from the younger groups. So we all need to stay open to each other's influence, because we can learn so much from each other.
Totally. I mean, I feel like, you know, I don't know which philosopher or whoever said it, but the idea that like, you're never supposed to stop learning. Like once you stop learning, like you're not like, you're never supposed to stop. Right. And I think that's so real. Like, I think especially like, not trying to poke it at older folks, but older folks do get a bit, you know, in their set in their ways and a little resistant to change or new ways of thinking. And, So yeah, I agree. I mean, I think my partner and I talked about this the other day. I'm like, I wish everyone would just come from a place of love. If everyone just came from a place of love, we would all get along. It would be fine. But sometimes it, I don't know. But yeah, especially in election year, folks, just remember to be kind to one another, you know?
Yes, I agree with that 100% because it's already getting heated.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, it's funny when I was, because I'm a California girl, so we tend to vote a certain way in California. But there were some signs along the road in the middle of nowhere that were, some of them were a little disturbing with what they were supportive of. And yeah, it's interesting to when you drive across state lines or you're just in more rural counties and stuff like that, it's interesting the things you read on the side of the road.
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating. I feel the same way being in Massachusetts. Like, Boston is really like the only liberal part of Massachusetts, honestly. Like, the rest of it is very not. Like, Mass would be a red state if we were not here. And so, even thinking about that, or at the hospital, we have like a special fund for people coming from other states to get abortions because like it's illegal in Maine and other places. And so, I mean, there are things like that where like, it's kind of in your face. And like I said, just be kind to each other, friends.
When I'm a big believer in, you're allowed to vote for whoever the hell you want. I can't tell you how to vote. But try to vote for people who do not intend harm on other people.
Yeah, or people who are spreading like words of hope and stuff and not words of hate, right? Like, I think it's.
Don't vote for people who are divisive. Anyways, that's my rant. But yeah, I just thought that was cool. So because I never knew what the song was about. I just would sing along, not really knowing what I was saying. So I will never listen to that song the same way again, because now that I know that it's about that, I hear it differently now. So I was like, that's very cool for me to know.
Yeah, no, I mean, there are so many songs like that. I think like once you read the meaning behind it, or whatever, it changes its meaning, or even poems, stories, like whatever. That's like the beautiful thing about art, like I always love, like I like going to museums because I'm a nerd, but I like, some, like if you see a painting and then you like learn something about the artist or something, and then you're like, oh, that's why they did that, and it's really interesting. So yeah, very cool.
All right. Well, that's what I got for you. A little more lighthearted this time, but yeah, I thought it was kind of a fun story.
Yeah, I mean, definitely really tragic that Montgomery did end up losing his life, but very much like an interesting story. Like I said, I'm a fan of a good conspiracy, so I'm here for it. But yeah, I guess outside of that, friends, thanks for listening. You could follow us at Instagram at What the Ale Pod. You can also follow us on Patreon, and we do bonus episodes there. We have an email where you can send us different, personal stories or topic ideas, or just saying hi, anything like that, which is whattheelpod@gmail.com. And outside of that, I just want to say I appreciate you, Mama.
I appreciate you too.
And we appreciate you, friends. Bye.
Bye.